With As You Wish Talk Radio, broadcasting live from the East Eddy Ranch, otherwise known as Paranormal and UFO Central. And on that note, we actually are having Paranormal State back out. And if anybody hasn't seen that episode where they came to the ranch, I believe it's called the Gilliland Ranch episode, check it out, because some major ships came in, and they came in right on time, and the cameras caught them. So anyway, it's going to be quite an event coming up here this weekend. We've got a lot of other scheduled events. We've got Nahi, a world-renowned kahuna, coming in to do some workshops. And we're now teaching Kundalun, which is a very ancient practice. It's like Qigong, you might say, but it's kind of been hidden for 2,000 years, and now it's being released. So there's a lot of things happening at the ranch. And go to the website at easteddy.org and check it out and see what's happening and come up and join us. Tonight's guest, we have a great guest tonight. We have Dr. Michael Sala, and both Michael and Angelica, I consider them great friends, and they've been doing a lot of work out there in the Disclosure Project and getting information out. And they have some great news about this. Recently, I read about the disclosure that we do have a kind of a secret government saucer fleet, you might say. So, on that note, let's see if we can hook up with Dr. Sala. Are you here?
Aloha, James. I'm glad to be here.
Oh, great to have you on the show. Can you hear me okay?
I can, yes.
Okay, great. Yeah, you've got some major breakthroughs, and I've been getting some emails about this space fleet that we've had for quite some time. Would you care to speak about that?
Well, yes. That's been one of the best-case secrets, that we have a space fleet that uses some of the advanced anti-gravity technologies that various inventors and scientists have been talking about for many years. There's always been rumors of a space fleet, but recently there have been some breakthroughs in understanding just how real this is. And this comes at the same time as NASA is preparing for what is described as a kind of new set of manned missions to the moon and a new set of missions to Mars, using what they call the Constellation Project, which is similar to the Apollo Project in terms of having a single rocket with a capsule at the top, which is used to take astronauts to the moon and then bring them back, and then the capsule kind of falls back into the sea like the old Apollo capsules. And of course, you know, this is touted as the replacement for the space shuttle, but anyone who looks at that closely kind of realizes that this is not really a step forward, it's a step back, because, you know, the space shuttle could actually glide back and land at a runway and be reused, whereas these capsules have to just kind of like fall into the ocean to be retrieved by Navy ships. So, you know, it's kind of like a return. So that's kind of puzzling unless you understand that, in fact, we do have, or that there is a secret space fleet that does use these advanced anti-gravity technologies. And I think what's happening is that they're basically just starving NASA of funds, because they really see that, you know, NASA is really just a cover. It's not the real deal when it comes to space missions. It's really just kind of to give the American public a sense that, you know, this is as far as real money is going into this advanced space fleet. And people have been talking about this, and I'll be happy to kind of elaborate.
Yeah, I'd love to have you elaborate more on that. I've heard all kinds of rumors by people in the know that are, you know, used to work on some of these projects, and they made it very clear that we have, you know, a secret space station besides the one that's up there now, and that we have, we haven't had any trouble going back and forth to the moon or Mars, or, I mean, back in the 70s we had that technology, and probably even before that.
Well, that's right, yes. There's been all sorts of rumors. One of the more exciting developments is that there's been the disclosure of the actual project name, and the project name of the space fleet is supposed to be Solar Warden, and what that this was revealed on the Open Minds Forum, where there's a discussion thread discussing the disclosures of a group called the TC Group, which is known to the coordinators of the Open Minds Forum, and that they feel that this TC Group represents a group of credible whistleblowers who are disclosing information. Mm-hmm. And so they basically describe Solar Warden as being a space fleet, as comprising a number of very large operational aircraft carrier-sized vehicles, roughly half a dozen, and then between 20 to 30 smaller kind of space shuttles or smaller vehicles that are used for space operations. So what I was able to find, well firstly, one other source was able to confirm that, which is Henry Deacon from the Project Camelot, who confirmed that that Solar Warden is in fact the space fleet, and it's involved. The Navy plays a very important role with that, and I can talk a little bit more about that later.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to get two other sources, my own sources, to be able to confirm that Solar Warden is in fact the name of the secret space fleet.
Yeah, it seems quite interesting when you think about we've had this technology. I know the Germans had it in the 30s, and maybe even before that, we're not sure. But and we've had this counter-gravity or anti-gravity technology, and to have that technology for this long and continue to send, and, you know, astronauts up on firecrackers, you know, waiting for them to go off, to me is just, well, I mean, it's murder, basically. It's just insane.
Well, that's right. You know, it only makes sense if you want the American public to believe that NASA is, in fact, using the most advanced technologies. I mean, part of the great deception that has occurred here is, as you mentioned, that these anti-gravity technologies were developed in the 30s and the 40s. The Germans took a major role in developing these, and some of those German rockets or flying saucers might be more accurate. You know, they were operational. They were using these anti-gravity technologies, and of course that was something that the Allied powers tried to replicate as best they could. And after the war, they repatriated a lot of Nazi scientists to the U.S. White Sands Missile Base to kind of work on some of these advanced technologies. And so this anti-gravity technology has been around for a long, long time and fully operational from the 30s and 40s, and the U.S. has been able to develop a secret anti-gravity fleet using these principles and repressing any kind of civilian effort to replicate that. And I think the reason they did that was because they didn't want the anti-gravity principles to be made commercial, because I think they understood that if this technology was commercialized, that they would use control over it, that other countries could replicate it, that anti-gravity principles aren't all that difficult to use in developing these anti-gravity technologies. And so other nations like China, India, Japan would replicate these and would leapfrog ahead of the US, especially the Chinese and Indians, because they've got so many more people. And that if they had access to these anti-gravity technologies, where you could generate these enormous bursts of energy for propulsion systems, that eventually the fossil fuel industry would collapse.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was something that really concerned the corporations, especially the elite families that were behind the funding of a lot of the secret projects and controlled the corporations, that if they lost the revenue from the fossil fuel industry, that they would actually risk quite a lot, risk American financial hegemony around the world, because it's not a matter of, well, yes, you replace the fossil fuel industry and American companies, you can get a monopoly on other things. It was that, well, if you release the anti-gravity technology, other nations could replicate it quite easily without the need for the middleman, which is the American corporations that are heavily involved in the oil industry and the European companies as well. So I think NASA was part of the way to basically dupe not only the United States but the planet, other countries as well, into believing that the jet propulsion, rocket propulsion technologies, liquid fuels, solid-state fuels, all that sort of propulsion system, that was the best that there is. But in fact, it's not. It's a lie, and more people are coming out now to reveal the existence of the anti-gravity technology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's what I've seen over and over again, and talking to people that I work with in the know, and maybe one of these people, but I don't want to mention his name, and there's several others I know that actually worked on these projects, and there's a lot of scientists that did come out of Germany, and if you befriend them and talk to them, they'll just laugh at NASA and what's happening there, and they just said, what a bad joke, is being played on the American people. So they're very aware of the technology that existed back in the 30s and that exists to this day, and how far it's gone, and it is kind of sad. We have this new platform of transparency, where they are going to be transparent and start telling people what's going on, and basically that's so. Let's start monitoring everything that's going on. Monitor all the agencies and see where the money's going and see what they're doing with it. And I think if we did do that, we'd just be so upset about it, that there probably would be a revolution.
Well, that's right. If we started to follow the money trail, see where all this is going, eventually you'd realize, the American public would realize that enormous sums of money are going into developing these secret anti-gravity space fleets, these secret underground tunnel rail systems, using advanced magnetic levitation technologies that don't just span the United States but span the globe in terms of under ocean. We have transcontinental maglev rail systems that crisscross the oceans of the world that go from one continent to the other, and all this is kept secret. All this is used for those that are involved in these secret projects at enormous cost, and the United States citizens foot the bill, and they get to use these antiquated technologies. We're still in the United States. Anyone can raise questions about, well, why is it that countries like Japan and France and Germany have these advanced magnetic levitation rail systems? Why doesn't the United States have that? And it doesn't take you too long to figure out that, maybe we do have that because the tunnel boring technologies exist for underground rail systems, but that these are not made available to the American public, but just kept for those involved in the secret operations, because, and I think we've talked about this before, and I know you've talked about it in the past on your show, that those in the secret government really believed that, or have believed, maybe it's changed recently, that the planet was going to go through some kind of cataclysmic set of Earth changes, and they were kind of developing their capacities to either go off-planet with these advanced technologies, building bases on Mars, the Moon, in space, or go deep underground with the underground rail systems and underground bases that have been built all around the United States and the world. And I think what's happened is that at this moment we're at a point where it's being realized that perhaps these Earth changes, these destructive Earth changes, aren't going to happen. And so there needs to be a new plan, a new scenario. And I think President Obama is part of that new scenario, that I think that he's kind of someone that came in, a bit of a surprise to the elite, but came in, you know, riding the wave of kind of, you know, global enthusiasm and hope by many, especially the younger generation, that things are going to be done differently in the United States. And so I think many are now coming to realize that perhaps the kind of Earth changes may not be nearly as devastating as previously thought, and that, in other words, the United States and the planet might make it through. So I think Obama is someone that the kind of New World Order people had put in place to help prepare for the transition to a world where a lot of these secret technologies are disclosed. And I think that's why, you know, in the Obama administration you have some very important people who have been involved in the past with some of these classified technologies. And in, for example, General Jim Jones, who's Obama's national security advisor, he was a four-star general commandant of the Marine Corps, retired in the mid, I think it was around 2005, 2006, and then went to work for this as a director for the 21st Century Energy Institute, and also went to work at the Boeing Corporation as sitting on their board of directors, as well as some other positions. But one of the things that he was involved with at Boeing, as best as I've been able to determine it, is that Boeing was attempting to release anti-gravity technology for commercial application. But the Boeing Corporation was wanting to be able to develop a new generation of jet aircraft that used anti-gravity vehicles that would, of course, revolution the aerospace industry. And Jones was involved in that effort to try to have these technologies declassified, and the ones that had the power over the release of these technologies said no to that. But I think what's significant about Jones being in the Obama administration as National Security Advisor is that he was aware of that, and I think that he's in a position now where he can actually lobby or move or try to have these changes brought about where these anti-gravity technologies are released.
Yeah, it's about time. We've had these technologies for so long, and, you know, if we incorporated those into our jetliners, we wouldn't have any, you know, again, we wouldn't be having these fiery crashes and, you know, a lot of these other problems. And it just seems, you know, you look at all the way through, it's kind of sad, and it does have to change. But when you have the, you know, the oil industry, the pharmaceutical industry, and the war industry in power right now, you're not going to have this free energy, and you're not going to have the cure for diseases, and you're not going to have peace. And until people, you know, get away from that modality and start waking up, you know, until the masses wake up and just say, wait a minute, we're not going to support this anymore, you know, we want a cure, and we want it you know, done right and done efficiently and done without all the petrochemical vitamins and things like that, you know. You know, it's not going to happen. So I think it all goes back to educating the people, you know, like you've been doing and this show is doing as well, that we do have a choice and these technologies do exist, and maybe it's time to stand up and demand that they come forth.
Well, that's right. Yes, the technologies do exist, and I think that's something that really needs to be pointed out to a lot of people that are kind of observing what's going on. I'm very encouraged with the new Star Trek movie coming out, because I think what that does is it just kind of instills in people the vision of a positive future. Because if you think about it, there have been kind of very few movies that have come out which have really kind of presented to people a positive future of humanity as a space-faring nation. You know, typically we have movies like Independence Day, or the Steven Spielberg movie with the attack from the Martians. These kind of movies show humanity being kind of attacked by extraterrestrial civilizations, but they don't really provide a positive vision of the future. Kind of Star Wars did that, but that's kind of long gone now. But the new Star Trek series is coming out, and I think what that does is reinstill in people a hope that we do have a future as a space-faring nation and civilization. And so this makes people more open to the idea that we do have these kind of technologies that can take us forward very, very quickly. That obviously we're not going to become a kind of interstellar civilization using rocket technologies. That's just not going to happen. But there are these anti-gravity technologies that can very quickly transport us from one end of the solar system to the other and make us a kind of interstellar race. But I think for that to happen, we need to have disclosure. We need to have transparency, because the extraterrestrials that are monitoring us, I think that they are very concerned with the kind of more tribal warfare mentality that we have generated for a long time, and the way in which kind of military organizations and the corporations that they're tied in with really promote war and kind of like manipulate people and societies into just accepting kind of whatever war scenario is presented before them. And I think for us to become an interstellar civilization with these advanced technologies, that we, the people, need to get back control over the military-industrial complex. That we just can't assume that the military-industrial complex will just kind of share this information with the people. We have to kind of really work hard to get that back. And that means to kind of like dedicate ourselves to finding out the truth, becoming active, mobilizing when necessary in terms of like, getting people involved. Just kind of like any political organization does. You kind of mobilize, educate people so that you can get them out there to promote your issue. But we really need to start doing this, because we're not going to become a space-faring culture unless these anti-gravity technologies and the other sophisticated sequestered technologies are revealed to the people, and that's what we have to do now.
Now, what about before we go jumping off into space? I know there's a lot of groups that kind of don't want us out there, and you know we can't rightly blame them due to the way we are, like you're saying, a primitive warlike group here, and I think the people in general we get along fine, you know, and we don't have any problems. It's actually usually governments and industries that create the wars and create the problems. But the trick is if we do have this technology and it gets out there, you know, we're going to have to be very select on who we send out there as ambassadors and to, you know, interact with these other beings, because right now we basically send, you know, our military out to greet them, and they greet them aggressively and would love to shoot them down and steal the technology and use it for the war industry. And until that changes and when we get people that are, you know, basically ambassadors and that are awake, to be going out into space, they're probably not going to have a lot to do with us other than to tell us to go home.
Right. Well, I think we need to kind of follow a similar process to the way in which the kind of aviation industry took off. That yes, the military were very interested in it from the very beginning, with the Wright brothers, but you also had a commercial aviation industry taking off as well. And what's interesting is that initially, there were attempts to kind of suppress the whole aviation industry after the Wright brothers for a couple of years there after they had their breakthrough and proved that heavier than air flight was possible. For a couple of years there was a very concerted effort to kind of suppress this from getting out. And we've kind of been like that as far as these anti-gravity technologies for 60, 70 years now, as far as their kind of commercial application, that these technologies have been prevented from getting out there. That while there have been military developments and applications of these technologies, by and large, it's only been a small part of the military. I mean, we need to separate the kind of black world operations that involve the military and the and various corporations that are involved in those, with the kind of mainstream military, the regular military, like the U.S. Air Force, the U.S. Navy, that do still use these rocket-propelled technologies for their jet aircraft and for their missiles and for their craft, satellites and so forth, that in fact that much of the regular military, as also with the civilian sector, we are denied access to these anti-gravity technologies. And that portion of the military and the corporate world, the kind of black world, they're the ones that, as you point out, they're the ones that are going out there into space and interacting with advanced extraterrestrial civilizations. And it's really not a good basis by which humanity can interact with these advanced space-faring civilizations, because the people or that portion of humanity meeting with them are not representative of the rest of humanity. These are typically people that operate in the shadows. They are using advanced technologies that they kind of keep from the rest of the population for kind of really selfish purposes at the end of the day. And as you pointed out, they've been very aggressive. I mean, there are many examples of some of these advanced space weapons or particle beam weapons being used against visiting extraterrestrial vehicles and shooting them down. And so with the space fleet, I know that there have been a number of whistleblowers who have said that they've worked on these advanced projects, space fleets being part of it, and that they have been getting in a shooting wars with extraterrestrial visitors. So so all this is happening, without the knowledge of most of humanity, but it's being all paid for by humanity, and that's a very unethical process, and so we need to really put a stop to that.
Yeah, I've been getting a lot of information. We've seen here, just right overhead, we're having just incredible activity here. And we're filming, sometimes three ships in one frame and up to six ships all flying together in different directions and, turning and doing all kinds of things. And it's really jumped up here. There's major activity and, there's just too many ships and too many different types of ships to think they'd all be military. But, they could be the military. And there's definitely a presence of UFOs much bigger than I've ever seen, and you can tell they're different types of ship with different technologies, and lately we've seen these smaller ships. There's some very big ones that come in, and brilliant lights on them, and these little smaller ships are like buzzing them, they're buzzing them really, and then kind of like strafing them almost, but it's not like there's a war. We don't see a war going on, but they don't change direction or anything. Bigger ships, they just keep going, and obviously they're extremely advanced, and there's probably not too much anybody can do to them, but there's definitely something going on up there, and we've got it on film, we've got hours of footage of this, and it'd be nice to find out exactly what is going on up there in the skies, and how many of these ships aren't ours, and how many are ours.
Well, that's right, yes. I mean, that's something that everyone would really benefit from if we knew exactly what what was up there. The most exciting development would be, of course, the growth of a kind of a civilian anti-gravity industry. It's really kind of important to point out that, this has happened in the past, that there has been civilian projects that have succeeded in producing anti-gravity technology. In 1960, for example, Otis Carr, who was a protege of Nikola Tesla, he was able to develop an vehicle using kind of off-the-shelf products. So that kind of shows you just how easy it is to replicate these technologies. It's not all that difficult, which is why, as I said earlier, there's fear that the Chinese and Indians would leapfrog the United States if anti-gravity technology was released. But anyway, back in 1960, Otis Carr, he developed an anti-gravity vehicle, and that was successful. It was successfully tested. One of the pilots was Ralph Ring, who came forward in 2007 and revealed what had happened. Basically, what happened was after the successful flight, very shortly after that flight, Otis Carr's compound was raided by various U.S. National security organizations, and they basically just cleared out his manufacturing center, his workshop, the lab. They charged him with some concocted charges that the New York Securities Exchange came up with, and they basically justified on the basis that the development or the release of these technologies threatened the U.S. monetary system. Well, if you think about that, I mean, that shows you how powerful the conventional fossil fuel industry is, because these anti-gravity technologies would threaten the existing fossil fuel industries that are tied in with the U.S. monetary system. So some of the major corporations that are part of the fossil fuel industry that support the various banks or these various banks own these industries, that their stocks would collapse, and that was why I think Otis Carr was shut down, because in a sense it was true, the release of these anti-gravity technologies would lead to the kind of meltdown of the monetary system, simply because the biggest stakeholders were so tied in with the oil industry. But that's just to kind of show that we can go down that path very, very quickly. If the repression is lifted, civilian inventors can very quickly develop these anti-gravity technologies and take humanity, take civilians out into space. And, of course, there are various efforts now. I think the Bigelow... Robert Bigelow has his project to kind of create a civilian space industry. I think he has a couple of craft in orbit at the moment. I think Virgin Atlantic, they have a kind of a space, a Virgin interplanetary system, I think something like that, or Virgin Galactic, some kind of name. So you have these kind of aviation entrepreneurs that are getting ready for the transition of our society into a space-faring society. So as long as the kind of repression if the repression is exposed and the anti-gravity technology is released, then civilians have the know-how to get out into space very, very quickly. And kind of like a dovetail or work in a collaboration with the kind of more conventional national security organizations that are already up there with their secret anti-gravity technology.
Yeah. We've got a caller on the line, I believe. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm still here. My name is Bob.
Hello? No, you're not. I wanted to talk about, it's funny you mentioned Otis Carr, because I was raised in Apple Valley, and that was in Hesperia, I believe, where his place was. And we used to see weird things, like light up in the sky and go over to the other hills. And we used to drive by that place, and they had a big sign up with a flying saucer on it when I was a kid.
Yeah, James, I'm here.
And I saw that, and it was pretty amazing. But I always wanted to go and check it out and see what they're doing there. My parents at the time, my mother actually just said, no.
James, I'm here. This is Bob from California. Can you hear me?
So all the local people were all afraid of it and wouldn't, get involved in it. So it was kind of interesting, because there was so much rumors and other nonsense going on, and they're calling them all scam artists and everything else. It was interesting how much disinformation was spread around the area. Even as a little kid, I heard that, and that is the process of what they do. First, they create the rumors, the disinformation, then they turn them into criminals, and then they come, confiscate everything.
Exactly, yes, that's what they did to Otis Carr, and it was really a shame what happened to him, because he was jailed on under these concocted charges from the Securities Exchange Commission, and then when he came out of jail, he was discredited, he had no means of raising money, even though he was a brilliant inventor, and of course he kind of died in obscurity, and the people that worked with him on the project had to kind of scatter and just keep silent, and Ralph Ring maintained silence for decades until he came out in 2007. It was like 37 years that he was silent about this. But yes, it's quite amazing that you lived in that area and you saw what was, got an idea of what was happening there. And yes, the disinformation used to discredit people with this kind of information is quite pervasive. But nevertheless, Otis Carr, he was successful just within. I think he had arrived in California in 1959. He had to basically, they had discredited him in Oklahoma City, where he was working on a similar project. And just before the successful, just before the test of his space vehicle or the model project, or the model craft that he had assembled there in Oklahoma, he got very badly sick. It was like, now we know that he was probably targeted with some kind of psychotronic weapon to make him sick, but he became very, very sick and was hospitalized just before his test. So of course the test didn't go ahead. He was subsequently discredited, and then he had to kind of shift operations to Apple Valley, California, and within a kind of year he was able to very quickly set himself up. He was able to build a fully operational craft just using kind of off-the-shelf equipment with a little bit of financial backing and some support from Daniel Fry's organization. I think you were aware of Daniel Fry's organization. I can't remember the name of it, but Daniel Fry was an engineer, and he also was very much into promoting the know-how on developing anti-gravity space vehicles. Mm-hmm. But in less than a year, Otis Carr was able to produce a vehicle. So it shows you just how easily it can be done if the inventors are allowed to do this without being repressed.
Oh, I agree 100%. I know we saw things up there all the time, and there's a good chance I might have saw one of his test flights, because we saw this light go streaking across the sky really fast, and it appeared over on they're called the Sidewinder Mountains or whatever. And everybody saw this event happen, and, just a huge glow, and then it zipped back again, and all these people got in their Jeeps and drove up there to see what was going on and couldn't find anything. But, we used to see, when we lived in the desert, we used to throw our sleeping bags out on the grass because it was pretty hot up there, and we'd sleep outside at night quite a bit. And we just watched things zipping around the sky and making right angle turns and doing zigzag patterns. And, this was back in the late 50s and early 60s. So there's incredible activity up in that area. And I know my dad used to have a convertible when we were really small kids. And he'd pull over the side of the road and he'd say, "Look up, see that?" And we'd see these five or six shiny discs going by. And he was also raised in New Mexico, and my grandmother was very involved in the Roswell situation. So she was very good friends with the first responders and the sheriffs and everything. And she said they were as white as a ghost, and they couldn't even hold a cup of coffee. And they told her what they saw, and they said there were bodies involved and everything else. And it shook them up. She said these guys are staunch, salt of the earth gentlemen. And she said it shook them up so bad they couldn't even hold a cup of coffee, and they were still white, white as a sheet. So anyway, I have no doubt my whole family has a long history of being involved in this, my dad told me one story, which is he's gone now, he's passed over, but he told me a story that they were driving down the highway in New Mexico, and the ship landed on the highway and blocked traffic for quite some time. and all these people, and he was the second car on the scene. There's a bread truck in front of him, and the bread truck operator was just flipping out, going, "What do I do? What do I do? You know, do you have a gun? Do you have a gun?" And he was just going crazy. And my dad calmed him down and said, "You know, there's not really a lot we can do." He said, "Anybody who has technology like that, I don't think we should be, you know, doing anything aggressive towards them." He goes, "All we can do is sit here and watch." And so they did. And then it took off and left, and that was the end of it. But you never heard one peep about that, and, you know, it blocked a whole highway for a while.
Well, that's amazing, yes. I mean that to have that happen to your family and have that in your history, it's really quite an amazing experience. And I know it's just part of how the whole ET presence has been suppressed for many, many years. I mean, that anyone talking about this would be ridiculed, that the mass media was basically directed not to talk about these things, that you had the whole kind of effort by the CIA, the National Security Agency, to debunk UFO reports and discredit it, so that anyone that did talk about this was very quickly learned that their careers would be threatened. And so, yeah, I'm not surprised that you could actually have a UFO flying saucer land on a major highway, block traffic for I don't know how long, and then you don't read anything about it in the national media. I mean, that's just so symptomatic of how the cover-up has been maintained for decades now.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny, even my dad never talked about it. You know, just in his last days, he talked a little bit about it, but he kept quiet about it. But, you know, he was very quiet about a lot of things. But, you know, he was like a walking Buddha, just a beautiful man. And, but, you know, he believed in telling the truth, no matter where it fell. You know, if you saw something, you know, there's no problem in talking about it. And you know, if somebody asked him, he'd talk about it, but he didn't, you know, make it a topic, you might say.
Right. Well, yeah, it's really important that we just kind of get people to talk about, you know, what they're experiencing. And I know there's been an increase in UFO sightings, and that's really good that the Internet has just allowed people to come forward,
mm-hmm.
share their stories, put up their videos, put up their photos, and share the information. So in a sense, we've kind of got almost an information overload. And I know you've got a lot of photos, video that you have, that you put up on the Internet as well. And it's just like, well, we have so much now that's made available. So we just kind of, you know, people need to get to that next step of accepting that, you know, these photos are really pointing to a real phenomenon and not get caught up with the kind of, you know, the debunking efforts and those that want us to kind of like just stay fixed on the question of, well, you know, is it real? Are they flying saucers that... in fact, you know, we can go beyond that and kind of like start asking some of the really important questions, like you know, who's in control of these, you know, where do they come from, what are the motivations of the extraterrestrials that are visiting, and just kind of ask those sorts of questions. And it's good that the Internet is here now so that these sorts of issues can be discussed, and the whole kind of exopolitics movement is taking off simply because it encourages people to ask the policy questions and explore them. And you know we just, like everyone else, we try to make we try to kind of understand what's happening, and you know, can make mistakes, but we learn, and we kind of try to be more accurate and try to kind of look at the whole situation as kind of objectively as possible. And so I think it's a very positive development.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've always said, you know, it's like my truth is flexible, you know, and I speak about my experiences and what I know now, you know, at this moment, but, you know, it could change. You know, I could have, you know, a greater experience and a greater understanding come in, and, you know, and until that does, you know, whenever anybody else is telling me something, it just kind of goes in the interesting file, you know, that's a possibility or whatever, but I don't go after them and just say, you know, that's an hallucination or that's imagination or whatever else, because, you know, just because it hasn't been my experience. And I'm seeing that happen so much with, especially in the UFO community, where they basically, you know, as Art Bell said, they eat their young, you know, and And, you know, it is sad that we don't all cooperate and work together and put, you know, all the information out on the table and then, you know, start disseminating through it and see, you know, how much of it is going to, you know, come together and hold water or whatever, rather than, you know, constantly, you know, fighting and bickering and censoring and you know, the competition is just incredible in the field.
Well, yes, that's been kind of one of the more disappointing aspects of this kind of work. I mean, I just wasn't really prepared for that. I mean, I've worked in universities and I've worked in fields where people, you know, scholars can have their different views and their different kind of approaches, but, you know, by and large, there's a cooperation because all are trying to understand the truth of what's going on. But the UFO community, it's really kind of very interesting to watch how it's not so much the truth, but it's like trying to impose your perspective on others and try to kind of argue that, you know, you've got better proof than someone else, or that that only those things that can be proved are worth listening to, which is kind of like, you know, it's nonsense because truth is different to proof. I mean, we can know something is true without having proof.
Mm-hmm.
And we operate in our lives, you know, knowing things to be true without demanding proof. I mean, you know, imagine what it would be like if we demanded proof for everything in our lives. I mean, you know, how can you prove? How can you get? You know, do you have to kind of get loved ones to prove that they love you? But you know the truth of that just by watching their behavior. So similarly, when it comes to this whole field of UFOs. You can know the truth without necessarily having the proof for it, but of course, you know, there are those that want to take proprietary hold on it. There are those that want to debunk. There are those that want to set standards or become the gatekeepers for the field, and it can get quite vicious, as you well know, and that's very disappointing because it's certainly not the way in which, you know, knowledge is developed. That knowledge is developed through people cooperating to better understand, you know, what it is that they're interested in. And we're all interested in extraterrestrial life. We're all interested in the truth behind the UFO phenomenon. And so I think it's not that hard to cooperate if there's a sincere desire to do so. But I think, unfortunately, you know, this whole field has been so infested by the intelligence community sowing the seeds of disinformation, perpetuating crises, and actually having a lot of kind of agent provocateurs out there, that in fact the field is kind of is very divided and very antagonistic. So it's not the easiest field to work in, but you know, I guess like you, you know, I'm determined to get the truth out there, and I'll definitely work as hard as I can to make sure that the truth gets out.
Yeah, I commend your work. You've been doing a great job on that, and Angelica as well. She's been working her tail off trying to bring a more spiritual, you know, enlightened approach to this project. The you know, what I've seen is these has amazed me. It defies all logic. But the ones that are demanding proof are usually the ones that are the biggest censors. And when you have the proof and you have it all laid out, they won't even come and look at it. You know, they just keep running this program of, you know, you can't prove it, you know, you can't. And I just said, well, why don't you come and look at the evidence? And they, you know, I call them armchair investigators. You know, they never come do the research, never come and see what's going on. But they have this opinion, and that opinion is that this is all hoaxed or this is all faked or whatever. And then they say, well, you know, we have triple PhD Boeing engineers coming out here and Air Force base commanders and pilots you know, people from all walks of life are seeing these ships operate, and they have no explanation for them. And matter of fact, they've gone public and said that these are not ours, we don't know whose these are, and they have extreme technology that we don't even have a clue how they operate. And you know, when you have all that evidence and the video along with their testimony to go with it, you know, one seems to kind of scratch their head going, you know, why is this not getting out? Why is, you know, we're almost becoming one of the most censored group on the planet, you know, and we have some of the best evidence or the most evidence. So it's to me, I just had to kind of scratch my head and go, what is wrong with this picture?
Right. Well, it's double standards. I mean, it's it's something that is very ripe as well in the whole kind of UFO research community that, as you say, they demand proof, empirical evidence, but if you have it, well, then you're ignored.
Yeah.
So it's really, they're not really seeking proof from you. I mean, basically they're kind of imposing these artificial requirements, and if you meet them, then you get ignored.
Yeah, it's totally illogical, and you bring it up, and then they go rant off and, you know, start, they go into the, you know, the rant and start calling you all kinds of names when you kind of call them on what they're doing, you know, and you try to, you know, you do it in a nice way, but you say, okay, let's be logical, let's be scientific about this, you know, let's look at the evidence before coming to a conclusion. You know, and I love what Einstein said, you know, he said, condemnation without investigation is the height of ignorance, and we seem to see a lot of that going on, but, you know, I do believe we need to, you know, use scientific methods in this process, but we also need to be open to the unmeasurable, you know, and some of these events are not physical events, and we can't demand physical proof for these events because, you know, they're non-physical. They won't fit in a test tube or get on film or whatever.
Well, that's right, yes. So, you know, we have to really look at how we develop our methods in looking at the whole phenomenon, that on the one hand, you do have your kind of traditional empirical methods of scientific validation through observable phenomena, but then on the other hand, you've got a phenomenon which kind of like transcends the kind of traditional five senses in terms of, you know, what can be perceived in terms of touch, feeling, hearing, so forth, and it kind of engages with other abilities, and so that means that we need to go beyond the kind of traditional research method and maybe start looking at qualitative methods, because ultimately, you know, what we have is a phenomenon, you know, that has a kind of objective empirical side to it, but has also a very deeply subjective personal aspect to it. You know, so everyone who experiences a form of contact will experience it in a unique way.
Mm-hmm.
And so as kind of a social scientist, I'm very interested in how, you know, you, James, as a contactee, will experience contact as opposed to, say, another person who has experienced contact, but their experience is very different. You know, that they might come out of it kind of like more fearful, whereas you come out of it feeling uplifted and optimistic. And so, I think what we have here is this kind of subjective personal aspect that really needs to be looked at using qualitative research methods.
Yeah, definitely. We're going to frame it in our belief system, whatever we experience, and if we come at it as a victim, that's the way we're going to see it, and if we come at it with love and joy and bliss in our hearts, that's, there's an old saying, the mind in which you seek is the mind in which you connect, and you know, we are creating our own realities down here, not just on this reality, but on other dimensions as well, it seems like, you know, I don't want to undermine other people's experiences, but it may have been their consciousness that drew to them that event or created that reality, you might say.
Right. I kind of didn't quite hear you at the end there, but I think if it's concerning the raising of consciousness, that's, I think we have an agreement there that, yeah, that's the way forward.
Mm-hmm.
If more people become aware of what's happening in this whole field, that that the consciousness raises, and then we're better able to deal with it as a society. And that's something that I'm very excited about with the new book that I just that came out. My new book, Exposing U.S. Government Policies on Extraterrestrial Life. That book basically lays out the foundations of the cover-up, that the policies that have been put in place to kind of suppress the free energy technologies, to develop these advanced space weapons, secret agreements with extraterrestrials, that all of these things are part of the you know, decades-long cover-up. And so by just putting that information out there in very clear ways, I'm hoping that my book can be part of this process of just educating people, raising consciousness.
Hey, you read my mind, because I was just going to ask you about your new book, and we got it out there. We're out of time, unfortunately, but how do people get that book, and how do they get in contact with you?
The best way is to just go to my main website. That's exopolitics.org, exopolitics.org. There they'll find links to the book and links to my recent articles on the Examiner newspaper where I talk about the secret space fleet. And, of course, they could always go to Amazon.com and just type in my name, and they'll see the recent book. I want to thank you for having me on the show again, James. It's been great. Always love talking to you, and I really admire the work you're doing up there at Mount Adams.
Oh, thank you so much. And I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. Give Angelica a big hug. And this is James Goodman with As You Wish Talk Radio signing off. Have a great evening, and thank you so much, Dr. Sala.